Once again, good afternoon and good morning to our call participants from the U.S., and welcome to today's conference call related to our signed agreement to acquire Akorn and Merck's biosimilars business. The call will be hosted by our CEO, Stephan Sturm. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking statements and additional legal information, which is available at the beginning of our presentation. Should be read in conjunction with this presentation. We appreciate that you could join our call on such short notice. After this call, a replay and the transcript will be available on our website. With that, I would like to hand over to Stephan.
Thank you, Markus, and also for me, apologies for that technical glitch. Hasn't happened in 12 and a half years, happened today. Let's hope the line stays connected. Again, good afternoon, good morning, warm welcome. And also, I appreciate very much you being available for today's call at such short notice. Markus has pointed out the safe harbor language to you, and ahead of my prepared remarks, I'd like to focus today's call on the two strategic moves announced last night, the acquisitions of Akorn and Merck's biosimilars business. With regard to our Q1 results, we'd like you to bear with us until May 3rd. All I will say today is that we've had a good quarter. We're in the process of updating our forecast right now and cover the usual details on next week's investor call. Also here, thank you for your patience. So let's move to the transaction's highlights on slide 3. And when you think back to our results presentation in February and our discussion of likely Kabi growth initiatives, you should be able to recognize many of them. So this is about preparing Fresenius Kabi for the next decade. Not only, but in particular, its U.S. business. First, Akorn will enhance and complement our current injectables franchise. Second, we will diversify our product portfolio via Akorn into adjacent growth indications like ophthalmology and dermatology, and via the Merck platform midterm into biosimilars. Third, as discussed on many occasions, this is about further leveraging our already strong, award-winning actually, institutional market access. Widening and deepening our product portfolio will make us ever more relevant to the few remaining very powerful GPOs. At the same time, and this is my fourth point, Akorn will provide us access to alternative distribution channels, such as pharmaceutical wholesale clinics, direct to physician, and retail sales. That is valuable in itself, and even more so once we launch biosimilars. That is one link between the two transactions. The other is their complementary financial profile. Whilst both of them are strategic in nature, they also demonstrate our financial discipline. I believe the earnings multiple implied in our Akorn bid is very fair, and the structure we found with Merck is, in substance, more a joint venture than an acquisition, with the majority of the upside for us. And so, whilst we expect an initial biosimilars R&D burden, that should be broadly offset by Akorn's earnings contribution. And I therefore want to very much confirm our 2020 earnings target of 2.4 to 2.7 billion euros. On to slide 5 and a closer look at Akorn. Let me start by saying that we have been very impressed with the leadership team and the employees we have met during our due diligence. They have built a great company with a broad product portfolio and pipeline. We are convinced that Aecon is the right partner for Fresenius Kabi to further expand its reach and portfolio in the U.S. The company's current portfolio and substantial pipeline will strengthen our existing IV generics franchise. We'll get broader market access and an entry into ophthalmology and dermatology, where, incidentally, we see an opportunity to introduce some of Aecon's products also outside of the U.S. In very many ways, Aecon's business is quite comparable to our own U.S. operations. That makes us believe that integration complexity and risk should be rather limited. The transaction will be all debt financed, and before integration costs, we expect it to be accretive to our net income right away. Turning to slide six, where we have mapped the dosage form of Aecon's products and the distribution channels they go through, and that we will gain access to. So Aecon is substantially more than selling injectables via GPOs. So we'll gain breadth, smart breadth, because Aecon is adjacent, complementary, and the product portfolio has common characteristics to our own existing business. So we'll gain more products for the channel we already master and can provide more products for the channels Aecon will give us access to. Slide seven shows the two product portfolios side by side. What we're trying to bring across is A, breadth. Look at the number of products, top left. B, growth potential, top right. An aggregate 140 pipeline products. And C, complementarity of strength with little to no overlap. A bit of an overlap is immediately evident on slide eight, though, where we look at the location of Aecon's and Fresenius Kabi's U.S. operations. Combinations seem possible and would lead to both cost savings and growth via debottlenecking. Let me add at this instance that each of Aecon's three U.S. plants has recently been inspected by FDA and hold a VAI status. On to slide nine. We performed a detailed due diligence, had access to a comprehensive data room, held countless expert sessions, and were able to address all our questions and concerns. Have we overlooked anything material? Possible, but unlikely. The due diligence also included plant visits by me and much better qualified experts, as well as a detailed review of Aecon's product portfolio. That led to us building a solid bottom-up business plan, which formed then the basis of our decision to make a bid. That business plan also captures our synergy assumptions, which we have summarized on slide 10. We are projecting a midterm ramp-up to an annual run rate of roughly $100 million pre-tax, and it'll take approximately $140 million of pre-tax integration costs to get there. Spread over the 2018 to 22 timeframe, front-loaded though. In addition, we'll have a non-cash effect from the required inventory revaluation, purely accounting driven. And we're also going to show that as a special item next year. On to slide 11 and our guidance for Aecon's sales and profit. The 2017 ranges reflect the guidance Aecon initially provided earlier this year. You may have seen that the company last night, when endorsing our bid, also reconfirmed that guidance. Upon a close review of their Q1 results, we are comfortable with those ranges. The 2018 numbers are based on our own assumptions and the business plan. And that modest year-on-year growth that you see, that primarily reflects the increasing competition in one of Acorn's key molecules, i.e. ephedrine. Revenue erosion in existing products is a fact of life in the generics industry. We experience it, you know that, and net growth will always have to come from new launches. And based on our pipeline review at Acorn, we're confident that that will materialize. Slide 12 provides an overview of the financials of this transaction and should be helpful for modeling. Our total consideration for Acorn sums up to $4.75 billion, and that corresponds to approximately 12.4 times EBITDA. I'd call that a fair multiple. In any case, meaningfully below the around 18 times we paid for APP back in 2008. Moving down the P&L, we expect an amortization charge of around $130 million PA, and the all debt financing will consist of euro and probably more US dollar denominated instruments, and I therefore model an average interest rate of 4%. Our tax rate assumption of 35% is based on the status quo. We did not want to speculate about a potential U.S. tax reform, but we are prepared for it. We expect the transaction to close early next year, following an FTC review. And as I said earlier, we also expect immediate earnings accretion, albeit before integration costs. Over to slide 14 and the highlights of the acquisition of Merck's biosimilars business. We are very excited about this transaction as it enhances Kabi's position as a leading player in the market for injectable pharmaceuticals. It is consistent with our communicated strategy to expand Kabi's product portfolio also via acquisitions. And we are convinced that the entry into the biosimilars business now is the right step at the right time. I'd like to think of this transaction rather as an investment, which, however, has to be taken through the P&L, an investment to prepare Kabi for the next decade, an investment that builds on Kabi's existing strengths, in particular its strong position in the generics market, and, not least, an investment with an attractive risk-return profile. Sure, there are uncertainties surrounding biosimilars, which is why we were only watching and not acting over the last years, but there are also massive opportunities, and they become increasingly clear. And the transaction structure that we found now, that nicely contains our risks while leaving us with the majority of the upside. For Fresenius Kabi, this is a jump start into biosimilars. That platform that we acquire gives us direct access to an attractive development pipeline. And we are taking on board a highly experienced team of biosimilars experts with excellent development know-how. Besides the strategic importance of this business for Fresenius Kabi, such as the opportunity to leverage existing market access in the U.S. And becoming an ever more attractive partner for our customers, we are convinced that the investment in itself is financially sound and attractive. We project first sales towards the end of 2019 and expect to ramp up to the high triple digits from 2023 onwards based on the current product development schedule. As I said, the transaction structure will enable us to substantially mitigate the risks associated with the investment. And you will already have seen that the vast majority of the consideration, i.e. up to 500 million euros, is variable and strictly tied to development success. We expect EBITDA break-even for 2022, and from the year after onwards, this investment is expected to become highly accretive to our earnings. In a nutshell, the entry into biosimilars is an entrepreneurial, strategic move, from our perspective, with a highly attractive risk-return profile. On to slide 16 with a brief overview of Merck's biosimilars business. It was founded in 2012 as a business unit within Merck's biopharmaceutical development network. It offers a strong biosimilars pipeline in oncology and autoimmune diseases with an attractive mix of both early and late stage products. The portfolio comprises a proposed biosimilar of adalimumab, which is currently in a global phase 3 study. Adalimumab is a biologic therapy used in the treatment of chronic inflammatory autoimmune conditions, including different types of arthritis or Crohn's disease. Current branded sales of adalimumab are approximately 12.5 billion euros. In addition, the portfolio comprises pegfilgrastim. And this molecule is mainly used to stimulate the level of white blood cells in patients undergoing chemo and has current branded sales of approximately 4.2 billion euros. At the core of Merck's biosimilars business is a proven and dedicated team of more than 70 experts located in Aubonne and Vevey in Switzerland. And they will join us now. I can't wait. Merck's biosimilars business is embedded in a network of also external partners providing support. And we have ensured via extensive service agreements that the support in areas such as manufacturing, analytics, or safety and clinical operations will continue smoothly also under our ownership. Slide 16 is meant to illustrate how biosimilars are enhancing Fresenius Kabi's position in the injectable pharmaceuticals market. Our existing strengths are the foundation for our growth strategy, be it on the manufacturing or the distribution side. Based on our expertise in one-for-one generics, so direct copies, we expanded into an area that we call Generics Plus. We differentiated our existing generic products in order to either improve patients' safety and or to enhance handling. Prefilled syringes are a good example here, but also premixes in our FreeFlex bags. Such differentiation typically translates into higher market shares and better prices, so nice revenue growth opportunities. Value-added medicines are also building on our existing strength. Digital tools increasingly allow us to better reach our customers and to be able to provide incremental services. Home care is one relevant example here. So we have always been looking for useful additions, ideally upgrades, for product lines or assets that we already own. always with a close eye on complementarity. We don't want to lose ourselves. But we remain keen to grow depth and breadth of our product portfolio, and with that, to leverage our superior market access. We want and need to be an ever more attractive and relevant partner for our customers, in particular in the U.S. And so against that backdrop, biosimilars are the next consistent step in Kabi's growth strategy of entering adjacent areas. Again, sure, the complexity, required resources, and associated risks are increasing. But at the same time, the opportunities are very compelling. So this comes down to managing risk versus reward. Containing and mitigating the risks while preserving most of the upside. For the avoidance of doubt, you see the red stop signs at the top of this slide. We will not go into the direction of new drug discovery. And we will most definitely not become a big pharma company with billions of euros in R&D budgets. Our biotech experience is behind us. Instead, we will continue to build on our existing and proven strengths. On to slide 18, where I want to lead you through the financial characteristics of this acquisition, or better said, investment. I want to point out that the variable part of the investment is by far larger than the fixed proportion of 100 million euros upfront payment plus 70 million of development compensation this year. The variable proportion of up to 500 million euros is, I mentioned it, strictly tied to development hurdles, and hence the risk is mitigated and shared accordingly. As already mentioned, we expect to ramp up this business to a high triple-digit million sales number from 23 onwards and project a significant accretion on group net income kicking in at that point. We have given quite some thought to the question of whether we should contain our investment and what an appropriate maximum financial risk should be. And now we are absolutely clear on this point, and we have imposed on ourselves an investment ceiling of 1.4 billion euros on the current portfolio and up to the time of break-even. For the avoidance of doubt, that number of 1.4 billion euros includes the fixed and 100% of the variable consideration, as well as the ramp-up of R&D and marketing and sales expenses, again, until the EBITDA break-even that is expected for 2022. So, in an absolute worst-case scenario, this 1.4 billion euros is the maximum financial burden for the Fresenius Group, and that spread out over more than 5 years. We obviously are convinced that we're not going to see that worst case, but we still wanted to put your minds at rest that there is most certainly a cap on what we're willing to invest. Financing of that spending will be mainly via free cash flow, and we expect the transaction to close in the second half of 2017, depending on approvals by the relevant antitrust authorities. I want to move on to slide 19, where I want to show you what the combination of the three businesses mean for us. What you see in the three columns is the distribution channels that the three companies are active in, and you see the product portfolios of the three businesses across. I agree, it's a busy slide. Maybe the pictograms don't help, but what we're trying to illustrate is that we can build on the existing strengths, and as I said earlier, we can bring more products into channels that we currently are not working on, and we can also bring more products into the channels that we already master. You see at the top Kabi's current and expected portfolio, always with a white background, that is our relevant strength. And you see in particular the injectables, but also the former Fenwal portfolio there. Anything with a light blue background has been launched already, but hasn't reached target market penetration yet. And there you will see in particular the prefilled syringe, our parenteral nutrition, and also the Agilia pump. What we're trying to show here is that going forward, we will be able to add Merck's biosimilars business to the product portfolio, and that going forward, so in particular, once we have launched our biosimilars portfolio, we will be looking at one of the most comprehensive product portfolios that are around in the U.S. market, both for GPOs, but also for the alternative distribution channels that we're looking at here. And in a sense, Akorn paves the way for the most efficient, effective launch of our biosimilars platform, because we would expect that many of these biosimilars products will also go down into the retail pharmacy channel, where we are hardly active at this point in time. On to slide 20, where we wanted to illustrate what makes us, from our perspective, the rightful and best owners of the two businesses that we're willing to acquire. Somewhat flippantly, we call the headline, "Who Brings What to a Great Party." I will not go through each and every arrow, but what they should illustrate is, always with the blue arrow, what are existing Fresenius Kabi strengths that can be deployed to the acquired business, and what can we also gain from the to-be-acquired businesses. Starting with innovation and development, I would say whilst Merck very clearly has a lot of regulatory know-how in originator drugs, we also can add with that from our U.S. regulatory experience when it comes to generic copies of originator drugs. At this point in time, I would also like to confirm that our friends and colleagues at Helios embrace the concept of biosimilars and will help us when it comes to accessing patients for the required clinical studies. It is pretty obvious to us that with our larger scale in manufacturing, we can bring quite something in terms of cost savings, but also quality management to our new friends at Akorn. At the same time, there is quite something that we can learn from them when it comes to the adjacent and clearly not dissimilar alternative dosage forms. We believe that as a generics company, we have the right SG&A culture and also cost structure for a biosimilars business that will very rapidly turn generic going forward. And it is also fairly obvious that there will be cost savings once Akorn is no longer going to be stock listed. The core of it is our strength in marketing and sales in the United States, and in particular our GPO access is something that we are particularly proud of. You may have seen our investor news from yesterday, where yet again we won the Supplier of the Year award from the large GPO Vizient. Let's move on to slide 21 and the expected implications of both transactions on our group financials. Kicking it off with the leverage ratio at the top. After closing of both transactions, and obviously fully pro forma Chiron Salute, our net debt to EBITDA ratio is expected to be around 3.3 times. So not massively above our self-imposed target corridor of 2.5 to 3. And we would expect leverage to be back to approximately 3 times, i.e. the upper half of that range, by the end of 2018. As far as earnings accretion is concerned, we have split that because we recognize that many of you look at earnings and earnings accretion in different ways. In the middle section, we are giving you an indication in which year both transactions combined will become accretive to group earnings, and that is before the amortization charge of approximately 130 million euros for Akorn, dollars for Akorn, and before the integration costs of approximately $140 million dollars. The amortization charge is, as you are all well aware, non-cash, and it is the flip side of something that is, in my mind, very positive: a strong product portfolio, excellent customer relationships, and a strong brand. So we will show the accretion going forward before and these charges, but also traditionally and very conservatively on a fully loaded basis. On that fully loaded basis, and that means including amortization charge and also after the integration expenses, both transactions combined are neutral to our group net income in 2020 and are expected to be highly accretive from 2021 onwards. What does that mean for our 2020 target? You see it at the bottom of the page. Well, since the effect of both of these transactions is neutral, we are very comfortable in confirming our earnings target of 2.4 to 2.7 billion euros. On to slide 22, and that should be the final slide and should illustrate our growth path for the next decade. We are convinced that including those two transactions, Kabi is stronger than ever before. The company will not only make a decisive step in growing the depth and the breadth of its product portfolio, it will also significantly increase its attractiveness as the partner of choice for our customers. Also going forward, organic growth of our legacy business remains at the core of Kabi's strategy. We have a strong pipeline in each of Kabi's business lines, and that will be the primary driver here. Take IV drugs in the U.S. At year-end 2016, we had a record 52 ANDAs pending. By now, it's 55. You saw that earlier. And with the acquisition of Akorn, we're going to add yet another 85. I'd say that's what I call bright growth prospects. In addition, we're going to firmly follow our fill-in-the-blanks strategy. And in the U.S., you heard us, the acquisitions will help us to complement our portfolio and to get access to completely new distribution channels. Above all, quality and patient safety is and will remain key. And Kabi will drive forward its investment programs at its major facilities to modernize and expand these sites. So I'm convinced that Fresenius Kabi is well positioned for continued, reliable and profitable growth, even in a volatile economic and regulatory environment. And my friends and colleagues at Kabi and I, we look forward to delivering on that commitment. One more thing, a last remark before we'll get to the Q&A session. Let me tell you that our CFO search has been completed, and we are very much looking forward to welcoming a new colleague in hopefully not the too distant future. As you would expect, a well-qualified colleague is in a prominent position and therefore not readily available. The current employer is hesitant to release the identified colleague that we are in agreement with. So therefore, unfortunately, I will not be able to disclose a name today. But I still wanted to put anyone's mind at rest that either we're not going to have a CFO going forward or that very soon I will be completely overworked. No worries. We will get very good support hopefully soon. But for now, on this one, I need to ask you also that to be patient. Having said that, I'm now very happy to take your questions. Thank you for now.
We are now starting the question and answer session. The first question comes from the line of Patrick Wood of Citi. Please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you very much for taking my questions. I have two, if I may, please. The first would be within biosimilars. What do you think your long-term view in terms of substitutability within the market is? So that's the first one. And then the second, obviously one of the most advanced assets on that side, is outside of Medicare Part B. I'm wondering within that, how much do you think the PBMs are going to do the work for you on substitution, and how much is going to have to be through SG&A investments and through CSOs and things like that? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. On your first question, we had discussed this on and off over the years to say that we are under no illusion that substitution rates will be meaningfully below what we do see in small molecule generics. And that has always also held us back in striking an entrance already before. And we do believe that with the transaction structure that we found now, we have found a commensurate mitigant to that risk. As far as your second question is concerned, we would very much expect that this is going to be different from molecule to molecule. Incidentally, we would also see quite a varying take-up from country to country. At the end of the day, as I said earlier, we believe that this market is going to turn into one that resembles what we do see currently in small molecule generics already. And therefore, you heard my comment a bit earlier that our SG&A discipline and SG&A culture is going to be extremely helpful when it comes to competing also via price.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from line of Michael Jüngling of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. I have three questions. Firstly, on the biosimilar costs, how will the phasing work over 2018, 2019, and 2020? Question number two is on the biosimilar investment of 1.4 billion max. How did you get to this maximum value, and how many products to market does this amount include? Question number three is on the earnings accretion. On the non-GAAP guidance of the earnings accretion by 2019, can you provide some color on what that range would be? And within earnings accretion, also for 2019 on a GAAP basis, but excluding restructuring costs, would this deal still be earnings enhancing, or would it be neutral, or would it be negative? Thank you.
Michael, thank you. On the 1.4 billion, we did derive that based on our bottom-up business plan. It comprises a single-digit number of molecules to the market. And it comprises, as I said earlier, the full payment schedule to Merck, as well as our internal R&D spend and marketing and sales build-up. For your modeling, I'm afraid all I can say is that we would strictly tie ourselves to the maximum of 1.4 billion over that time frame, and that it can very easily be in uneven tranches. It is lumpy expense items, and they may or may fall into individual years more evenly than others. I think for in absence of clearer guidance that I can give you, I would work on a straight line, but I still want to put in the caveat that it could easily be in uneven tranches. As far as the earnings accretion is concerned, this will very much, for in the year 2019, this will very much come down to how early we can launch the first biosimilar product. And I would say it is going to be considerably positive in 2019. As far as your question on the fully noted is concerned, it is going to be, from what I can see right now, mildly dilutive. As you can see in our schedule, dilutive in 18, neutral in 20, obviously, to state the obvious, somewhere in between, mildly dilutive.
Great. Maybe a quick follow-up on the Merck relationship. If Merck decided it needs the additional capacity they've allocated to you for its own pipeline, can they, under the agreement, terminate access to that plant or compensation?
The access is reserved and guaranteed. Breakage of a contract will strike penalties.
Great. Thank you.
Next question comes from line of Tom Jones of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I had several. The first was just on Acorn. The timing of this, the transaction with closure expected in early 2018, does suggest that you're expecting a second review under Hart-Scott-Rodino. If indeed that's correct, just wondered whether you could flag what you think the potential issues might be. Then secondly, as far as Acorn goes, the guidance you've given for EBITDA for 2018, does that include any synergies or realization of any of the 100 million of synergies in 2018? And if so, maybe you could give us some color on the phasing of the realization of those $100 million of synergies. And then the other area of question I wanted to pursue was on the biosimilar business, and following up on Michael's question about manufacturing capacity, the slide talked a lot about R&D and investments in sales and marketing, but didn't really mention manufacturing. Do you expect to make your own investments in manufacturing? Does the Merck agreement cover all your anticipated needs in terms of the product portfolio that, or pipeline that you currently have? Or would you expect to be seeking manufacturing capacity from third parties to cover your needs? And if so, how much of that is secured and how much of it is potentially to be secured?
Thank you, Tom. Acorn, you are correct. We're working on the assumption, even though that's not necessarily a given, that we're going to have a two-step review under the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act. There is a bit of overlap that the FTC is going to be interested in. From our perspective, it is not a lot absolutely manageable, even though I don't want to rule out that we will have to do the odd divestiture. To your second question, what we've been saying is 100 million or a ramp up of synergy benefits to a run rate of $100 million in the medium term. Frankly, that should be sufficient for modeling purposes. I'd model it over a 3 to 4 year time frame, and a certain tranche of that eventual $100 million run rate is included in 2018 already. As far as manufacturing is concerned, I want to refer you to our slide 20, where you will see on the manufacturing section only a slide from Merck into our direction. So at least at this point in time, we have no intention to build our own manufacturing capacities. For as long as we believe we need it, we have secured, reserved, manufacturing capacity at Merck, as I just answered to Michael, even though I wouldn't rule out that over time we will also look for alternatives.
Perfect. And then just one very quick follow-up on the finance costs. The circa 4% you're guiding towards is significantly higher than the circa 2% you guided towards when you did the Kiron Salud acquisition, even though by the time the deal's concluded, you won't be meaningfully different from a group perspective in terms of leverage. Is that purely a reflection of credit markets, the reflection of the euro versus US split that you expect, or if we work it through, assuming Fresenius Medical Care continues to grow over the next 12 to 18 months, while the group leverage is not meaningfully different, the leverage at the group ex Fresenius Medical Care, assuming they don't do large acquisitions, will be somewhat higher when these deals conclude versus when Kiln Salud deals. I just wonder what the influence of those three different factors is on your guidance towards the 4% rather than the sub 2 that you achieve with Kiln Salud.
It's purely a reflection of the about 2-point interest rate differential between dollars and euros.
Okay, perfect. That makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
Next question comes from line of Lisa Clive of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much. On the pipeline for the biosimilars asset, forgive me if I didn't catch these exactly right, but I think you said adalimumab, so branded Humira, and then was the second one Neulasta? Okay, perfect. My understanding from the research our firm's done is there may be at least two others in there Herceptin and Rituxan. Could you confirm at least sort of directionally if that would get us to that sort of $30 billion potential pipeline, and also how you're thinking about the assets that you want? Do you want to be mainly in oncology? Do you have much of a preference in terms of actual area, therapeutic area? And then second, on the Acorn transaction, clearly there's a huge amount of overlap in the IV generics business, but then you do have ophthalmics and dermatology. It seems like that's something you're quite keen on, given the diversification. Are those businesses up to scale, or do you think you need to do more to really make a success of those over the long term?
Lisa, on the thank you for your questions. On the biosimilars, I appreciate you trying, but I'm afraid I'm not going to go beyond what I said so far on the portfolio. And it is in, I will again confirm that it is in oncology and in autoimmune. Given our existing strength on the distribution side, I'd have a marginal preference for oncology also going forward. But I'm happy with those two areas that we now have exposure to via the acquisition. I'm mentioning the two names because you will find them in an earlier Merck press release. I think it is good industry standard not to talk about individual molecules. It would just hurt us in competition, so I'm asking for your understanding.
Fair enough.
As far as Acorn is concerned, I truly do believe that on the manufacturing side, there's quite a lot that we can bring to the party and to scale up those products. And it may look at first glance, maybe to some of you, that we're diluting ourselves, losing ourselves, but frankly, we will very firmly stay away from pressing tablets. I mentioned the shared characteristics of these products. They are non-solid, difficult to manufacture, sterile, therefore that is our strength. That is what we know quite a lot about. On that basis, in particular in ophthalmology, I believe that we can bring something to increasing and also improving manufacturing skills.
Just one follow-up on that. How much of a sales force do you need? And I assume, obviously, Acorn would already have that in place to service their own business. But is that something that you'll need to invest in over time? And are there other sort of cross-selling opportunities on the back of that?
In the U.S., yes, we do anticipate a bit of a build-up in a sales force. I would hope that that is going to be required because it would also mean that we have more and better products on the market. I made a side remark more towards the beginning of my presentation that we would also take a very close look at individual products in Acorn's portfolio and try to see whether those can be successfully marketed outside the U.S. But there, obviously, the distribution, sales and distribution infrastructure is already in existence.
Great. Thank you.
Next question comes from Veronika Dubajova of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Stefan, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three, please. The first one is just to follow up on, I think it was Michael's question on the biosimilar adoption. I mean, if I look at the guidance that you've provided of the high triple-digit million revenues by 2023, and I look at the addressable revenues for the two products that you're looking at, and there's quite a number of competitors that who are also developing those molecules, it does actually imply pretty significant adoption of biosimilars. So just back of the envelope math, I'm getting to 40-50%. Is that a reasonable number and consistent with how you're thinking about it, or have I made a mistake in that calculation? And it'd be great if you could maybe comment in relation to that medium to long term, what you think a biosimilar business P&L looks like. Is it closer to oral generics or injectable generics or vastly different? Maybe, you know, in 2025 or 2030? What are your expectations in the very long term? My second question is just following up on your comment about the non-GAAP earnings accretion. Should we be taking your focus on this as a sign that you're considering moving to a non-GAAP earnings measure? Or I wasn't quite sure how to interpret your comment on that, that you'll keep providing us the accretion before amortization figures. And then my last question really quickly is for Acorn, is there a depreciation charge we should be adding to the 130 of amortization that you've guided us to? Thank you.
Thanks, Veronica. On the substitution rate, I believe it was actually Patrick's question. Whilst I don't want to speculate on your 40 to 50%, my comment would be that 40 to 50% represents a meaningful discount to the substitution rate that we're seeing in small scale, small molecule generics. And therefore, I'd say with a proven efficacy and safety of these products, we are going forward also to see, in my mind, a growing substitution rate, given that the products are available, but that we are increasingly around the world running into budget constraints. All I was referring to earlier is that, in particular, in the earlier years, I would caution everyone, as we have seen in prior proposals that have been put in front of us, to go anywhere near the substitution rates that we currently have in small molecule generics. And therefore, going forward, that was, I'd say, the second part of your first question, I would very much expect that a biosimilars P&L is very closely going to resemble the P&L that we have in our liquid injectables at the moment. And that is why I was making the point earlier on the slide, who's going to bring what to the party, that we believe that SG&A cost discipline going forward is going to be much of a success factor. To your second question, look, I need to let you down. I'm sorry. But we are going to be our usual conservative but user-friendly selves. What we would like to do is to stick to fully loaded earnings, but we just recognize the diversity of approaches amongst the analyst community and also amongst our investors. So we're trying to get you the tools to get to the right metric, and therefore going forward, we will continue to focus on fully loaded earnings, but we'll get you all the necessary information to strip out non-cash charges and, in particular, the amortization charge. As far as one-time, truly non-recurring special items are concerned, you heard me a bit earlier that the integration costs that we do expect for Acorn, and also in particular that truly purely accounting inventory revaluation, that is something that, as in the past, just like in connection with the acquisition of the Rhön hospitals, we're going to show below the line as a one-timer. And lastly, regular depreciation. Yes, there is a little bit of something that you will have to add, and it is in line with the depreciation range that that you know from our existing businesses, so somewhere between 3 and 4% of revenue I would use for modeling purposes.
That's great, Stefan. And if I can just follow up, how long do you think for you until you get the biosimilar business to a, let's say, 35% margin?
I'd say it's going to be a pretty rapid turnaround once we're through break-even.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much.
Next question comes to the line of Gunnar Romer of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Gunnar Bohmer, Deutsche Bank. Thanks for taking my questions. I would have one on Acorn and two on the Merck biosimilars business. Starting with Acorn, I think you're indicating low single-digit sales and mid-single-digit earnings growth for 18 over 17. I was wondering whether you can talk a little bit about the expected growth profile beyond 2018, whether we have to take into account any special items here. How should we be thinking about the ramp of new products here that you've indicated in the pipeline chart, basically? Second question, then related to the biosimilars deal. Bigger picture question here, basically, why now and why this way? Specifically, I was wondering whether you can talk about what other potential entries into biosimilars you've looked at, for example, via in-licensing or acquisition of already established businesses potentially at a later point in time, or to put it differently, so what has led you to the decision to acquire cost now rather than revenues at a later point? And then the last question also with regard to the biosimilars deal, what would lead you to potentially terminate your biosimilars activities, if at all? Likewise, what would lead you to make additional investments beyond the deal you announced today? Thank you.
Thank you, Gunnar. On Acorn, look, we are reliable guiders, and therefore going at this point in time to 2018 already, view that as an exception. We did that in connection with the Chiron Salute acquisition. We're doing it now in connection with Acorn, but I'm asking for a bit of patience when it goes beyond that. We have a track record to protect, and therefore let us become the rightful owners and become even more intimately involved and knowledgeable about that company before we give you a dependable guidance for the years beyond. As a macro comment, I would say I don't see meaningful differences between Acorn's and Fresenius Kabi North America's growth profile going forward. And you haven't heard me you have not heard me revise Fresenius Kabi's midterm growth for the top line. And you know that that is what is implied for North America to get there. As far as biosimilars are concerned, well, as I alluded to, and we've had lots of conversations already in the run-up to the announcement from last night, biosimilars was always an area that we were interested in. When very many other parties got involved into this intriguing field, namely in 2008, we had other priorities. We had our hands full management-wise, but also financial capacity-wise, because we had just acquired APP in the middle of the financial crisis. So the question didn't ask itself, and it was clear that we just couldn't, just as irrespective of how much we wanted. What came to it was that the regulatory environment, so in particular the question what defines similarity, was very fluid and not very well defined. And fairly recently we've seen more crystallization on that topic and so a much more solid base from which you can build a business plan. I know that we're primarily talking about leveraging our market access, and therefore I think your question is justified. Why did we get involved also in the earlier stages? Look, frankly, from our perspective, that is just a highly, highly attractive area. The good thing for those incumbents that are in now is that we would expect that it is going to be a relatively small number of players also going forward. Therefore, from our perspective, now was the time to look at a meaningful opportunity to be a participant in that market. As far as the big cost items are concerned. We were talking about manufacturing already. We have no intention to get involved there. And as far as innovation and development is concerned, I believe with that transaction structure that calls itself an acquisition, but as I said earlier, in my mind, in substance, is much rather a joint venture. We found the right risk-reward balance. To your third question, look, I believe we have proven over the years that we are financially disciplined. Also, the joint announcement of these two transactions smacks of financial discipline, because I know that we have a commitment out to you as far as our midterm strategy is concerned, midterm earnings targets is concerned, and therefore there was zero tolerance to revise that. And therefore, you shouldn't view it as a coincidence that we announced the two transactions together, because in conjunction, it allows us to maintain and firmly reconfirm, actually, our midterm earnings target. Financial discipline at Fresenius means that you've got to earn the right to spend more money. You will recall what I said about next growth steps in the international hospital business and very clear guidelines that we have issued internally when more capital would be available and the higher hurdles that need to be overcome. Rest assured that the very same is true here. And it was also a very conscious statement that I said the biotech experience is behind us. We're not going to venture into that. We're going to remain very firmly financially disciplined and view us imposing a ceiling on ourselves as yet another very good example of financial discipline. What would lead us to potentially spend more? Well, if we make all the milestones, if we see an even more crystallized regulatory environment for biosimilars, if the competitive environment rather improves than deteriorates. So if everything has worked according to plan and better, then we may want to consider adding further molecules to the platform that we got ourselves. But just like with Curon Salute, the burden of proof is on the acquired business, and we want to see results first before we start dreaming about further extensions.
That's great. Thank you very much. Just a quick follow-up on the deal structure. The 500 million milestones, does that include any commercial milestones as well? And if so, can you talk about the split into developmental and commercial milestones?
It is development milestones, Gunnar, and what Merck is, what Merck can expect, you've seen that from the press release, is single-digit percentage royalty payments on sales once we're in the market.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Next question comes from line of Julia Dormois of Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for squeezing me in. I'm actually left with only housekeeping questions. The first one would relate to the pipeline of in biosimilars. You mentioned pegfilgrastim, but I missed in what stage the drug is, in case you mention it. And the second question relates to the Department of Justice investigation for many generic players that has been ongoing now for like 6 months. I was just wondering whether Acorn is part of the of this DOG probe, and what would, and if yes, what we would expect as a potential impact.
Julia, on as a non-scientist, I tend to abbreviate, so I tend to talk about ADA and PEG. And on ADA, I mentioned phase three. On PEG, pegfilgrastim, we're not mentioning, we're not giving you, I'm afraid, the stage that we're in. On the DOJ investigation, yes, I can confirm Acorn has received a subpoena. But as you've seen on our due diligence slide, so in particular, sales practices, pricing history, as well as the related customer perception, that has been a focus area of our due diligence, and we did not find anything to complain about.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from line of Chris Gretler of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Hi, Stefan. Hi, Markus. I have essentially three questions. You know, the first relates to Acorn. You know, you mentioned that, you know, the 100 million pre-tax synergies, you know, that is actually cost and growth synergies. You know, could you break that down, actually?
Chris, I'm afraid not. That is where we'd like to leave it for now.
Okay, and then you mentioned, you know, that, you know, there needs to be some modernization of the production network at Acorn. You know, is this a substantial spend, you know?
Over the years, we could certainly look at a triple-digit number. Yeah, true. At the same time, from an initial ramp-up, I would expect more of the same in terms of CapEx intensity as far as this business is concerned. You will have heard me talk about the regulatory status in the U.S. So what I'm talking about here is maybe not as much modernization and quality improvement, but also to a very large degree debottlenecking. You heard me talk about that as well also earlier.
Okay, and then two questions relating to the Merck transaction. You know, the break-even level for 2022 in terms of sales. You know, could you provide us with that?
It is an EBITDA break-even in 2022, Chris.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what kind of sales level would you anticipate to achieve that? You know, EBITDA break-even.
Sorry, Chris.
Okay.
Let me come back to you maybe at a later point when the portfolio is even better developed.
Okay. And then the last question is, I understand there is a relationship with Dr. Reddy, you know. Is there any change, you know, as a part of this transaction and, you know, this change in ownership, you know, or, you know, is this just, you know, you're inheriting that relationship and it continues unchanged, you know?
No change foreseen.
Okay. Good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chris.
Next question comes from line of Oliver Metzger of Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot for taking my question. My first one is just a follow-up on some comments on the production facilities. You mentioned that just the debottlenecking, bottlenecking what you targeted. But you also mentioned the three recent inspections by the FDA of the facilities, and as you also executed strict due diligence of these facilities, are the quality standards at Acorn already a level where you feel compliant even with your self-imposed levels of quality, which should be above the respective FDA standards? Second question, just very basic on the corporate structure. At Kabi, you've currently four different business segments. I know it's very early days, but would you share with us your view on the potential fifth or even sixth leg of Kabi, as your current description of IV drugs might be, given the this business as overly stretched, in particular for this for the remaining businesses of Acorn?
On your first question, what we did find and is a generally good regulatory standard. I mentioned it on the call. During my prepared remarks, I was keen to take a look at that myself. And what we did find is a confirmation of the FDA's recent inspections. And as I mentioned, generally the VAI status. We have been subject to a warning letter, or are continue to be subject to a warning letter in Grand Island, at least for the time being. And we have received quite a number of 483s also in the past. So I think we should be humble and avoid any form of arrogance. At the same time, I would say we have more manufacturing scale and larger, better equipped quality systems. And therefore, I do believe, as we said on that slide, there is something that we can bring to the party. On the other hand, there is nothing of an imminent urgency because these FDA inspections are all fairly recent and have gone all very well. As far, I think what you're referring to in your second question is Kabi segment reporting going forward.
Yes.
We are not ultimately decided on that one yet, so take it with a grain of salt, and there is a bit of time until the Akorn transaction is going to close. But at this point in time, on a preliminary basis, I could easily imagine that we're going to take anything that is not IV injectable generics in Akorn's portfolio into a other segment, so that we have then five product lines within Fresenius Kabi. Whilst the others are meaningful, so the other dosage forms in particular at Akorn are meaningful on an Akorn basis, they are, frankly do not justify separate reporting segments for Kabi as a whole. So in all likelihood, I would say we're going to break down Akorn's revenue into an injectables segment, and that is going to be added to what we have already. And the balance, the eye drops, the nasal sprays, the gels, and so on, they are going to go into a other segment.
Okay.
Thanks, Oliver.
That's helpful. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you joining today's conference call. If there are any additional questions, please do not hesitate to contact the investor relations team. We are participating in several conferences within the next few weeks and happy to meet you again soon. Thank you.
And obviously, we would all expect you back on our Q1 earnings call next Wednesday, May 3rd, same time, same location. Thank you very much.